Good morning and welcome to Sportin' Life with Sam Kekovich and Leon Wiegard with the compliments of Michelin Wines.
Oh, that wonderful product. And this time of the year, we tend to imbibe in a little bit of that product, that print in particular, Shiraz, which is our
Well, I've gone back to Shiraz, just a bit, away from the Pinot.
Yeah, well, I've never been that sophisticated with Pinot. I think Pinot's more an elitist drink. Leon, I'm still bread and butter.
No, I think it's more of a well, they used to call it a girly drink, and I think they're right. You know, it's a lighter taste.
Well, it's a lighter taste, and I think the reason people have acquired it, or they say they've acquired the taste, is because it gives them a degree of longevity of association. They can drink it for longer, so you're hanging around for longer. Whereas we like to just sip a Shiraz for its purity and its pure joy.
But there's a very big variety of Pinots. You know, they're very poor ones and very good ones. And
like everything.
So, anyway, we're starting to sound like the fraziest.
But the one thing, about it, Leon, the one common thread is that Mitchelton provided a palate for every for every conceivable choice.
And they've got a very big winery in Heathcote, as well as the Yarra Valley and the Nagambie, where they're famous.
Well, they are famous there. That's the headquarters, the parent company.
Have you ever bought a room up there at Nagambie? Oh.
Have I bought a room?
Yeah.
At the
Beautiful hotel you got there.
Beautiful hotel, yes. Well, I don't know if I've actually bought it, Leon. No, I know what you're alluding to.
No, I just think.
Yes, you were. I know exactly your. It's a Fitzroy tray. I know it is, Leon. You've got to stop harboring those grudges, I've got to tell you.
Did you say tray? My wife reckoned that was the way you said that instead of trait.
Yeah, tray. Tray.
It's correct, isn't it?
It's correct.
But everybody says trait.
Well, they do, depending upon how you're educated. You know, it's a matter of, you know, do you say tomato or tomato?
Now, we've got a very special guest today.
We have.
And his name is Darren Berry, better known as Chuck, who, well, let's find out about him once we say hello and good morning. Hey, Darren, firstly, it's belated, but commiserations on the loss of your great mate, of course, shares your name in a way. Your middle name is Shane, and Shane Warne, of course, was your great cobber.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen, and great to speak with both of you. And, yeah, that was a very tough time, continues to be a tough time, but unfortunately, as we know, what's guaranteed in life is death, and it comes sooner to some than we would hope, and it certainly shocked me, shocked the cricketing. I think everyone felt they knew Shane because of his brilliance on the field. But for me, men, and I know the two of you have lost some close mates as well, he was probably one of my closest, if not my closest, cricketing friend. We started our careers together. We were both failed AFL footballers. We thought we were going to play league football, but if the truth be told, we were too fat and slow down at St Kilda in the mud at Moorabbin in the under-19s. Shane played a little bit in the reserves. I only made it as far as the under-19s. And then cricket chose us. I think our body shapes were a little more suited to the game of cricket. And perhaps Sam Kekovich should have tried cricket as well, Leon.
Oh, look, don't open the gate, for goodness sake. Look, he's a migrant son from country Victoria, and we played all the sports. I played cricket, yeah, I know about spin bowling.
I couldn't we didn't take cricket until late because we couldn't afford the bat.
Oh,
you know. We used to roll up a sock.
Just before we go forward, Mitchelton Wines are fantastic. And I heard you in the introduction talking about the wines and whether Sam had bought a room up there. I did choke on my breakfast, but there's actually a wing. There's a wing named after him up there, the Kekovich wing. So if anyone ventures up to Nagambie, it is a beautiful place. And that winery is special. And ask for a room in the Kekovich wing.
Dan, delete that from the transcript, Dan, please. Go to a commercial break. We'll come back shortly with Dan.
You know, if you're in one of the Kekovich rooms, you get all the unpaid bills as wallpaper. Who ordered that wine? Now, Darren, away from Shane, well, his name will come up as we go through your career, but I was a bit confused in looking at Google. So I've known you long enough not to have done this, but you need to get some straight points. Did you go to South Australia first or come to Victoria first? How'd that all work?
Now, that's a good question, Leon, and a lot of people have forgotten. I mean, I grew very much up in Victoria, and I know I've known the two of you spasmodically over the years, but I was very much working class, southeastern suburbs of Melbourne. My father was a builder in Dandenong. well, the sort of upper class area of Dandenong Dufton was where I grew up. And then we moved, Dad retired, I had elderly parents, we moved down to South Gippsland to a little country town called Wonthaggi. I know Sam's stolen a couple of my lines on Wonthaggi. We'll leave that alone at this stage, but very humble beginnings, elderly parents, chasing my sporting dream, which was AFL as a young boy, no doubt about that. That's where it was my thought I was heading. I loved my cricket. I loved all sports like kids growing up in the 70s. But then cricket actually took a turn because I was offered a scholarship to the very, very first intake of the Cricket Academy, which was based in Adelaide at the time. Former Victorian cricketer and Australian cricketer Jack Potter was in charge. That's now in Brisbane.
Fitzroy man,
correct, mate. I hope we get to Fitzroy, Leon. I think I mentioned to you.
First drop. It was first drop there, wasn't it, Jack Potter?
Football club when you were the president. And anyway, we'll digress. We'll get to that. But
it's extinct now. It's extinct now. It's no longer.
And then, unfortunately, the late great David Hooks was captain of South Australia. And long story short, he said, if you stick around here, young man, I was only 18, there's an opening for the wicket-keeping gloves. And as a wicket-keeper, a bit like goalkeeper in soccer, and there's only one spot. So long story short, whilst very much a Victorian, an opening took place in South Australia. I played 1 year in Adelaide before returning home in 1990 and then had 15 years behind the sticks for Victoria. So that's how it started, Leon.
And just before we let you, Sam, loose on you, there are a number of records that you broke that I didn't know even existed. One is that you kept the bowling team byless.
Yep.
In the biggest score ever scored. With a wicketkeeper.
Some people listening may not understand the context of that.
I couldn't understand it when I said it.
Show today, so we won't say it's about wicket-keeping brilliance. We'll just say let's swing it around and say the year I played for South Australia, the South Australian bowlers never got past the bat too much, so I didn't have to do too much.
That's a better way to put it.
But, yeah, so, and to be honest, I don't know the number, but it was something around 2,500 runs was scored against South Australia without me conceding a bye. And for people that don't really follow the cricket, a bye is when the wicketkeeper fumbles one or drops run and they run a run. That's called a bye. Well, I had a run there for, I think it was about 7 or 8 matches where I never let through a bye. And it was a world record. Whether it still is, I'm not exactly sure. But that was in my first year as a young kid and it was something that got a bit of publicity.
Now, Chuck, you've got a very, very impressive record. There's no doubt about that. And I, being a country boy, love my cricket and played a lot of cricket, like all of us. Now, I grew up at a time when the Australian side had Wally Grout as the wicketkeeper. His 2IC was a guy called Barry Jarman, South Australian wicketkeeper. Now, I can go on and on in cricket. I remember this great Slug Jordan. He was a wonderful Victorian wicketkeeper, but never quite aspired to the pinnacle because of probably who was in charge then, Grout as well. And I looked at your career and, you know, you must sometimes look back or reflect and think, gee, how unlucky was I, because there was Gilchrist and Healy, you know, just before you. And I guess, I don't know whether it plagues you or not, but the fact that you didn't have a green cap, which you probably under normal circumstances would have acquired one.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Appreciate that. And you're right. It is, sadly, all timing for the wicketkeeper. And you mentioned two people that played ahead of me, and in my opinion, they were two greats for Australian cricket. When I first started, Ian Healy was the Australian wicketkeeper, and I thought he was a pure wicketkeeper, a class act, a reasonable batsman, but probably like myself, not a star batsman, a steady batsman. Then it came, and when Healy retired, I thought, okay, this is my time. And I was probably, you know, touted as the number two, and my great mate Shane Warne was the spinner in the Australian side, and he'd suggested it was my time. And then along came a fella by the name of Gilchrist that probably revolutionised the game. Firstly, for his batting, he could have played just as a batsman. When he first played, his wicket-keeping copped a little bit of criticism, and there was a bit of tension, you know, between the states. And but what he did was improved enormously, and he went on to become possibly our greatest. So, you know, my time, I look back, Sam, with no regrets, because I didn't leave any cookies in the jar or no stone unturned, whatever cliche we want to use. I chased the dream for 15 years. I'm proud of what I achieved and the fact that I captained Victoria. I played with some of the greatest players in Australian, probably world cricket, in that Victorian side, but the timing wasn't great. And there's been many. Richie Robinson sat behind Rod Marsh. You mentioned the Slug Jordan. It's all about timing. I read a lot of books as a kid about Grout and Tallon and all the great Australian keepers. But and then when Gilchrist retires, about five wicket keepers get a shot and play tests, eight tests, 20. You know, that's what it's like. It's timing, because once you get in, probably like myself, I got in the Victorian side, boys, and really there was a brief glimpse where I got omitted in early career, and then I played for 15 years. So same deal. There's kids in Victoria that sat behind me that thought, shit, I'll never get a chance. So it's part and parcel.
Chuck, do you think you might have been a victim of circumstances in terms of a changing of the game, the way the game was changing, the landscape of the cricket, in terms of, you know, you had these different formats of the game where the emphasis was on, you know, getting all-rounders. You know, you could, once upon a time, the side was picked purely on skill, and, you know, a keeper was picked purely for his keeping ability. But as the game sort of emerged and evolved, then they were looking for, you know, primarily batsman keepers and, you know, playing dual and triple roles.
Yes, 100%, Kekka. You're totally correct. And the emergence of the one-day game, and now as we see, I think, the saturation of T20 cricket, whilst I've been a beneficiary working in the industry, I think at the expense of national pride, in my opinion, that the T20 circus goes around the world. People have lost a bit of focus. Growing up as a kid, I mean, I used to idolise Marsh and Lilly and Tomo and Chappell, and it was to play for Australia was the absolute pinnacle. I think it still is. However, I think there's other distractions. And to your point, as a wicketkeeper, you know, when I was emerging as a young kid, I always prided myself on being the best wicketkeeper. And I thought that would get me through. And look, I wasn't a dodo with the bat. I could bat. I made four first-class hundreds, but I was not in Gilchrist's hemisphere. You know, he was us above. And as you suggested kindly, that's the way the world went. And they started to look. It happened in England as well. Jack Russell was a far better wicketkeeper than Alex Stewart ever was. But Alex Stewart opened the batting, and they went with Alex Stewart. And that's an evolution within the game. Some say we're good, some say we're bad. With my selfish hat on, I'd say, you know, it's not great for me, but in terms of watching the game and the selection of Gilchrist, no regrets, because I think he became a genius.
Now, just quickly, Chuck, before I throw you to the former president of the now defunct Fitzroy Football Club, I want your opinion, because I know you're a very fair person and I know that you uphold the integrity of the game, and that is of paramount importance to you. Mm. Now, I want to ask you about Stumpgate. When Bairstow was, the spirit of the game and the letter of the law. Where do you sit on that particular incident?
Because is this Sam King?
Polarise the crowd.
Is this you, Sam, asking you a question? Is this integrity and stuff in
North Melbourne, that's where we're based on.
Where were you in the photo in 1975?
You're breaking up. Now, Chuck, did you hear that?
Yes, I'll club finals, isn't that good to see as well? Alex Carey getting a stumping in the current Ashes tour is what Sam's referring to.
That's right.
And Johnny Bairstow wandered after the last ball. He wandered out of his crease. Alex Carey in the same motion, Sam. He never paused. He didn't stop and look and sort of bait Bairstow and say, "Go on, I dare you." It was an instinct reaction, in my opinion, and I personally have no problem with it, because it is a genuine dismissal in the game. Outstumped if the batsman leaves his crease before the umpire calls over. The umpire hadn't called over. Bairstow wasn't on his game. He wandered out of his crease. Carey accepted the ball off the fast bowler, let the ball go straight away. I did it, Sam, in my career, and it created ire as well at the time. Didn't get the publicity because it was only at state level. So personally, and some people disagree with me, some of my cricketing friends say, "Oh, no, I didn't like it. It wasn't in the spirit of the game."
Well, I didn't.
My answer is the spirit of the game, right, is if it's within the laws of the game, if it's not breaking the rules and you're trying to win a game of cricket, go your hardest.
I thought Australian cricket would have gained a heck of a lot more if they'd adopted the spirit of the game and called a batsman back in. Because, you know, heaven forbid, it needs a lot of remedying our reputation on the global stage.
Yep.
And that's just my opinion, anyhow. Leon.
I can't deny what you're saying there, Sam, but we will respectfully agree to disagree. I thought it was out. You would have called them back. And that's the opinion of the Australian public. Well, I think I've got 60% on my side and you've got 40 on your side.
Well, you've got two out of three here.
Where?
Sam's on his own. I'm with you.
Dan, I think it's with me, Dan, aren't you?
Oh, come on, trying to bluff him.
Yeah, I'm with Sam.
Oh, yeah. Now, getting away from that, by the way, I'll tell you what was over. Besto's innings.
See, that was uncool.
Now, you were one of the few wicketkeepers that stood up to medium-fast blokes from time to time. Now, and that's a very good all-round. Firstly, the ability to do it is fantastic. But secondly, it's a tactic, isn't it, that puts a wind up the batsman a bit?
100%, Leon. And again, a wonderful question. That's why I was delighted to come on with the two of you, because I know you'd be well researched and students of the game.
How many boys did you let? How many boys did you let go when you stood up to the stumps on quickies?
Well, I'll tell you where it was born, Sam. Like a lot of kids growing up, and I'm sure you did it as a country boy. We played cricket at the end of the street that I grew up in Dufton. At Catalpa Street, Dufton, I can still remember it like it was yesterday. A vacant block.
Well, to this day, it's still a crime scene.
It is. It is today, yes. At least 10, but sometimes up to 20 kids were sent off after school. It was a common thing in the 70s. And in footy season, two jumpers down at each end of the paddock, we called it, and you'd go your hardest, six versus six, and it was, you know, no rules. It was fantastic. And as a young boy, it taught me some good lessons. But as a wicketkeeper, in the summer, we would mow the strip. We'd get the mower, we'd pinch someone's mower, which is common in Dufton to pinch something. We'd mow the strip down. We'd put the crease. We'd mark the crease with the lime. And the kids that I played with, they said, now, as most, you'd either turn the trampoline up as the automatic wicketkeeper, or if you edge the ball six palings along the fence, you were out. I said, no, stuff that. I made sure there was just room enough for a little fat wicketkeeper to get in behind the stumps, and I used to stand up to the stumps then. We played with taped-up tennis balls. The ball would swing, and with my bare hands, and then one Christmas I got a pair of Rod Marsh wicketkeeping gloves, pride and joy. They're still sitting in my home. In fact, they're on my study wall right now, my first pair of keeping gloves. I'd stand up to the stumps in those little backyard matches. I think that's where it was born. It was just what I knew to do as a kid. And then I took that into my senior cricketing career, and it was probably a thing that Leon's alluded to, that people, you have to stand out of the crowd. You've got to do something a little bit different. I didn't deliberately do that. It was just in my nature. And, you know, I got a few stumpings. I suppose the one that was talked most about was I got Dave Boone down the leg side at the MCG standing up to Paul Rifle, who was Australia's opening bowler. Ooh. Now, that was unheard of. Paul Rifle doesn't like it. In the scrapped in his diary, 320 wickets, one stumped. He doesn't like that. Fast bowler didn't like it. But I tell you what, when we got David Boone out stumped on lunch, the team liked it.
Now, you've done coaching all over the world. I think we're a bit intrigued by this Indian League, the amount of money they have, and the audience size is incredible. Are you still doing that, or is that all over?
For me, sadly, it's still going on, the Indian Premier League.
IPL's huge.
The IPL, which is enormous, boys, and any cricket lovers tuning in today, if you get an opportunity to go to India, it's an intriguing place in itself, but the cricket over there, I'd not toured there. And once again, you know, we started the show speaking about my great mate. Shane Warne was appointed captain coach of the Rajasthan Royals in the very first year of the IPL. Now, Shane Warne couldn't coach a pig to be dirty. Like, he didn't respect the coach. He said it was something he actually caught to the ground. He thought there was no place in the game for a coach. So I rang him up, a bit cheeky, and I said, "Captain, coach, that's interesting." He said, "Well, I'm captain. I don't need a coach." And he paused for a minute. He said, "Would you like to come and move the cones for me?" So I jumped on board the coattails of my mate, and I went over. And while Shane was on the field, I was probably the off-field coach and organising the young Indian boys. It opened my eyes, gentlemen, at the passion for the game, and I'm not exaggerating this at all. In those first 3 years that Shane and I were involved in India, the crowds were enormous. I remember going to the stadium at Calcutta, Eden Gardens, I was trying to think of it, Eden Gardens, and there was close on 100,000 people at this IPL match. I couldn't hear myself speak, talk. It was like the AFL Grand Final every game, and people say, "Oh, I couldn't be." I said, "That is the passion and the volume of people in that country that are obsessed with the game of cricket." And we're talking the very first year, so Tendulkar was still playing. You know, Warne versus Tendulkar in Mumbai. It was box office, and I was privileged to be there for 3 years alongside my great mate. And one of our great memories together, bring a tear to my eye this week, that we won the first year of the grand final. Shane was the captain, and we had a group of young Indian kids. We were the underdogs. It was like, we probably won't win a game. We won the grand final. It was enormous, and it was one of Shane's proudest moments, and I was delighted to be there alongside
him. Chuck, just quickly, final one from me. You know, you've kept all around the world, kept to the some of the great fast bowlers, obviously the greatest spin bowler in the world, in the history of the game. Who are some of the toughest guys you've kept to?
Yep, and conditions probably dictated a little bit. And you're right, the subcontinent's the greatest test because of the nature of keeping there and up and down, bounce and spinning. But I look back on my Victorian career and that you guys have phoned me about today, and I look at some of the bowlers that I kept to. Let's just go through this. Merv Hughes, Simon O'Donnell, Tony Dottermade, Paul Rifle, Damien Fleming, Shane Warne. You know, I've just reeled five or six off. I could keep going. That period of time through Victoria, and then at the end of my career, Shane Harwood, Mick Lewis, Matthew Winners, not bigger names, but they were fantastic bowlers. David Saker. I reckon some of my best highlights were playing in the Victorian team because of the quality bowling attack that we had. And Warne was obviously a challenge, but the beauty of keeping to Shane was his control. When he first started, he was a little wayward, not just on the field, mind you. He was a little wayward in his bowling, and that the craft became so brilliant. The hardest skill in the game to perfect is leg spin, and people that don't really understand the game don't understand how hard it is to land a leg spinner on a 20-cent piece time after time. Warne mastered it, and I stood behind the stumps pretty much his whole Victorian career. Now, he didn't play much in the latter half because he was wearing green and gold. But for me, and now, you know, as an older man, I look back on my career and think, how lucky was I to keep to that quality Victorian players, and to say that not only Shane Warne was a great mate, but I got to wicket keep to the greatest leg spinner that played the game. That's probably one of my highlights.
No doubt about it. Darren, thanks for joining us this morning, and it's been a pleasure having you with us on Sport and Life, with the compliments of Mitchell, and of course, and Sam will make sure you get a nice sample of that when we see you at the grand final lunch for the Vang Zang Club.
In fact, we're going to make sure they're going to share a bottle or two.
Yeah.
We will have a Shiraz, and if we extend the stay, Sam, we might get a Pinot out. I know it's not in your...
There won't be a Pinot in my table. There won't be a Pinot. You can have that with Leon, but at my table there will be a... Keep this to yourself, a print. You might have heard of it.
You'll have to keep yourself nice that day because you're on last.
Oh, you put me at the back end. You put kickers on last.
No, you're
Sam.
No,
Sam's
middle of the show and Sam's last. I look forward to
Sam's
the
whipper-ooner. Good on you, Darren.
Story of my life.
Thanks for joining us today. Wonderful career, and we look forward to seeing you on Wednesday week.
Thank you, gentlemen. A pleasure chatting with you this morning.
Yeah, champs. Thanks, Chuck.
Darren Berry on Sport and Life, and nice guy.
Fantastic.
And
great Australian.
What's the story you steal from him about Wanthaggi?
Oh, Wanthaggi. I think it was a bit of a reference made to some of our I just forget.
No, his story is one thing is the place you take the wrong turn to San Remo.
That's it. That's the way.
And by the way, Wonthaggi are in the grand final.
They are. And playing my side, Maui.
They're playing Lee and Gaffer, aren't they? Or Maui, are they?
Yeah, Maui. Yeah.
Anyway, my side is
Manny Galagotis.
Oh yes. Well, Jared Blair, of course, Jared's is captain coach of. The old Collingwood player.
That's right.
Played in the 2010 grand final win as a very young bloke.
That's right. Just got beaten. Oh, they won.
No, they won.
They won.
And there you go. A bit of detail. We'll be back.
Bit of superfluous information.
All right. We'll see you next week, folks.
Oh, Jesus.